We don't really think of this section as being society anymore, Fletch. Although, of course, there's always the social aspect of it. We think of it more as human interest, with the emphasis on women's interests. That's why I brought up the latest scoop on jodhpurs. Oh, it's not just fashion anymore, it's more lifestyle. It's not just beauty, it's health. Right, women's healthy lifestyles. You'd be surprised at some of the topics some of our younger women writers want to discuss these days. Anne picked up some copy off her desk. Here's an article comparing the relative merits of manufactured dildos, with pictures supplied by the manufacturers, I expect. Do you think we should run an article comparing dildos, Fletch? Which do you think is the best dildo in the world today? I can't tell you. Why not? I couldn't be disinterested. I'm attached to it. It would be a subjective opinion. I see. Again, Anne McGarahan struggled to keep the corners of her mouth straight. She dropped the copy onto her desk. Ah, the woes of being an editor. Needless to say, I've had that story on my desk for some time. Dildo? Yes. I'm sure you'll find space for it. So you see, we're into all sorts of areas of interest to you. We're not just concerned with little old ladies who slip vodka into their tea. Big mouth Frank. So you haven't yet figured out what your assignment is. I was hoping it would come to you on your own. Something about sexual aids? I know. You want me to do a report on what sexual aids do 2 out of 3 gynecologists recommend. You ran in the Sardinal race yesterday. Oh, no. Didn't you? Yes. Frank told me you ran behind a group of about 12 women you couldn't bring yourself to pass. Oh, no. These same women received rather wide publicity, it seems, on this morning's sports pages of the News Tribune. As she was saying this, Anne McGarahan opened the News Tribune to the sports section and looked at the 2 large photographs on facing pages of this group of women coming and going. My, they are attractive, healthy young women, aren't they? Not too shabby. For some reason, Frank takes this spread on his sports pages as some sort of personal affront. Also, I suspect he is in his office right now getting considerable flack for it from the usual groups. Oh, boy. Ben Franklin Friends Service, a service company. Anne appeared to read from the newspaper. What sort of service do you suppose they provide, Fletch, to have Frank so upset? You're kidding. Anne jutted her large face across the desk and asked, Does it have something to do with men? I suspect so. Tell me what. Fletch felt the back of his chair pressing against his shoulder blades. It's an escort service of the traveling whorehouse variety, and I suspect you know that. Ah, sounds like there's a story here. What? No story. As I've outlined to you, Anne said, on these pages we're concerned with women's interests, their health, how they make their livings. This is a family newspaper. Nice to hear you say so. Your investigation, of course, will be discreetly reported. You want me to investigate a whorehouse? Who better? I'm getting married Saturday. Have you already passed your blood test? Fletch took a deep breath. Anne held up the flat of her hand to him. This is a new thing, as I understand it. Prostitutes who are obliged to stay in prime physical condition. Goes along with several articles we've run on organic gardening, I think. How does this Ben Franklin Friend Service operate? What is the source of their discipline? How do they entertain men professionally without having to drink a lot themselves? If they are not dependent upon drugs themselves, why are they prostitutes? How much money do they make? Anne continued holding up her hand. Of more importance, who owns Ben Franklin Friend Service? Who derives the profit? Fletch let out his breath and said nothing. Anne said, I think we could have a story here. Best way to do it, said Fletch, might be to send one of your young women writers in to apply for a position with Ben Franklin Friend Service. Ah, but it was your story idea, Fletch. Frank said so himself. It wouldn't be right for us to take it away from you. Of course, we may send a young woman in too for a preliminary investigation, that side of the story. I said I'm getting married Saturday. Doesn't give you much time, does it? And besides that, Anne said, refolding the newspaper on her desk, I think Frank feels that such a story, well done, of course, would go a long way toward getting him off the hook for these unfortunate pictures that ran on the sports pages this morning. She folded her hands on the desk. Not all is tea and biscuits on the lifestyle pages, Fletcher. Definitely you're the man for the job. Fletch was looking out the window. P.S. Your fern is dead. I happen to like brown fern, Anne said without looking around. I feel they make a statement. Despair springs eternal. Oh, boy. Happy to have you in the department, young Mr. Fletcher. At least you won't have your purse snatched. It's not my purse I'm worried about. He stood up. It will be interesting to see what you turn in. You're asking me to turn in under wicked circumstances. Oh, and Fletcher.
Yes, ma'am.
Be careful of Biff Wilson. Don't get in his way. You do, and he'll run over you like a 50-car railroad train. He is a mean, vicious bastard. I ought to know. I was married to him once. Fletch, there's a call waiting for you. The young woman outside Ann McGarahan's office jangled her bracelets at him. Line 303. Nice suit. Afraid you're going to get raped around here? Hello, Fletch said into the phone. Hello, said Barbara. I'm furious. I'd rather be Fletch. What the hell do you mean by chewing out my employer? Did I do that? Cecilia's very serious about Jodhpur's just now. She overbought. I care. She wouldn't let you come to the phone. Company policy. The phone's for business, not for the employees. But I'm the fiancé of her number one salesperson. And what do you mean you can't have lunch with me? Things are a little confused here. This is Monday, Fletch. We're getting married Saturday. We have things to discuss, you know. Anyway, I'd already agreed to have lunch with Alston. We want him as my best man, don't I? That's the least of my worries. We don't have much time. You've got to get with it.
I'm with it.
I mean really with it. Look at all you've got to do. Cindy says, Barbara, cool it. Don't chew me out now.
Why not?
Because I've just been chewed out by absolutely the best. Next to her, you sound tin horn. Then why don't you marry her, whoever she is?
I would, answered Fletch, except she has other ambitions for my proclivities.
Chapter 8. Good afternoon, Alston. Fletch slid into a chair at the cafe table. Good afternoon, Alston said. I'm having a beer.
Enjoy.
Want a beer?
Fletch nodded. Alston signaled the waiter.
Two beers, please.
With the back of his hand, Alston then brushed a speck of lint off the sleeve of his suit jacket.
Fletch, I couldn't help notice as you scuffed along the sidewalk.
What?
Your suit.
I've been assigned to the society pages.
Alston grinned. Well, that's a real to hell with society suit.
It makes a statement, I think, Fletch said. Like dead ferns, despair springs eternal.
I see you had a super morning, too. Did they finally get you for that headline you wrote?
Headline? Doctor saves life in accident?
They never noticed that one.
The waiter brought the beers. Sometimes I think I'm the only one at the News Tribune with any news sense.
I have that headline hanging on my wall.
We must look at the bright side, Alston.
Yeah, Alston said. Barbara.
Barbara just chewed me out.
Oh. This morning I was chewed out by the managing editor, Frank Jaffe, the News Tribune's star crime writer, Biff Wilson, Ann McGarahan, the society editor, and my fiancée, Barbara Ralton. And it's only Monday.
Well, in a suit like that, as much as you can be said to be in it, I'm surprised anyone takes you seriously.
Oh, yeah. Fletch removed his coat and put it on the back of his chair. I was also held up by a liquor store. Shot at.
Lots of people have been held up in a liquor store. Once my uncle was in a hurry, you know, before the rabbit started nibbling his toes, and
I interviewed a nice kooky lady who said she was someone apparently she isn't.
You interviewed an imposter?
I guess.
Did you get anything interesting out of her?
I did have the feeling I was leading her, Alston.
I would think you would have to feed answers to an imposter, Alston said, to get any kind of a story.
What's more, she got my clothes off me, ran away with them.
All this happened just this morning?
And those sneakers were just getting comfortable.
Fletcher, are you sure you can make it outside the U.S. Marine Corps?
It's hard, Alston, getting a start in life.
Alston held up his beer.
To youth.
No one takes us young people seriously.
And we are serious.
We are indeed seriously serious.
The waiter said, Are you gentlemen ready to order now?
Yes, Fletch said, the usual.
Sir, the waiter said with poised pen, it may be usual to you, but whatever it is not usual to me.
You mean I have to tell you my order?
You could keep it to yourself, sir. That would cut down on my work.
I had it here just last week.
I'm pleased to see it was you who returned, sir, and not whatever it was you had for lunch.
This is Manilow's, isn't it?
The waiter glanced at the name on the awning. That much we've established.
A peanut butter and sliced banana sandwich with mayonnaise on pumpernickel, Flett said.
Ah, said the waiter, that is memorable. How could we have forgotten?
You make it special for me.
I would hope so. And you, sir?
Liederkranz and celery sandwich on light rye, Alston answered. Just a soupçon of ketchup.
I beseech thee, O God, that's another special.
The waiter went away hurriedly. Even the damned waiter doesn't take us seriously, Fletch said.
No one takes you seriously. Maturity is too precious to be wasted on the old.
Aren't we mature? Veterans. You're a lawyer, I'm a journalist.
People still plunk us in the to be seen and not heard category, though.
Could it be that we're pretty?
In that suit, Fletcher, you dim daffodils.
I should think so.
This morning I got called into Holler's office. Senior partner. Summoned. You see, I'm supposed to sit in on meetings, keeping my mouth shut, of course, and never, never laugh, let my jaw drop in shock, or stare too much.
Those the conditions of your employment?
You got it. I'm supposed to just listen. Pretend I'm not there. That way I get to learn how grown-up lawyers work up their fees to the exorbitant, pay the rent for us lesser souls, and maintain their Mercedes.
Sounds edifying.
Educational. Also, of course, peons such as I are to be present at meetings so we can understand what research, legwork, is to be done on the case underfoot.
Don't you mean under consideration or under advisement or something?
Underfoot. So here's a client, new to Habeck, Harrison, and Holler.
Ha ha ha.
Excuse me, I haven't finished yet.
I should have said, hey, ha, ha. Have I got that right?
Probably, whatever it is you're saying. The waiter put their sandwiches in front of them. He said, here's your fodder.
Yeah, said Fletch. Thanks, Mudder.
Anyway, continued Alston, while checking his ketchup and apparently finding it satisfactory, this new client was interrupted Saturday night by the police while removing silver, stereo, and other glittery things from a home up at the Heights. The scandal and the reason for this gentleman coming to Habeck, Harrison, and Holler is, you see, that the home, silver, stereo, and other glittery objects did not belong to him.
A burglar.
Well, someone in the front lines in the theft business.
Why wasn't he in court this morning?
Came directly to us from court, having had the wisdom to ask for and get what will be, I'm sure, the first of many postponements. He was out on bail. Which modest amount he posted himself. His reason for doing so and rushing off, he told the court, was that he was obliged to take his 15-year-old dog to the dentist.
Had he an appointment?
Unbreakable.
A mission of mercy.
Doubtlessly, the court is now prejudiced in his favor.
You're not about to tell me he was lying to the court.
Well, he told us, or rather he told Mr. Holler, that while he was in court the dog, waiting to be brought to the dentist, was howling so in pain a neighbor shot him. Fletch shook his head.
He needn't have rushed.
He salted his peanut butter banana and mayonnaise sandwich.
Tell me, did he call up and cancel the dentist's appointment?
He didn't say.
I'm trying to gauge the degree of this man's honesty, you see, his concern for the social contract.
In meetings, I am not allowed to put forth such questions.
I forgot, you're a hanging plant.
That, or whatever is put at the base of plants to aid their growth.
I'm surprised Mr. Holler, being senior partner in an important law firm, would be interviewing a simple burglar himself. Why would he be taking on a burglar as a client?
Ah, Fletch, you are innocent as to how law firms, and thus the law, works.
I thought I knew a few things.
I bet you thought law firms practiced law.
They don't?
That's not their primary function.
It isn't?
No.
What they actually practice is something called cooling the client.
Do they teach that in law school?
No,
which is why starters, such as myself, work in law firms a few years at just enough above the minimum wage to keep in clean collars. Because it is not being taught in law schools, we must learn this technique essentially to keep the law firm afloat.
So what's cooling the client?
When a client first knocks on the door of a law firm as ambitious as Habeck, Harrison, and Holler, the law firm's first job is to discover how much the client, not the case, is worth,
It takes experience and wisdom to make such an assessment. I don't see how what the client is worth has to do with what the case is worth. Suppose it's a simple, straightforward case, but the senior partner who conducts the first interview discovers the client is rich. Under the circumstances, what would you do? Practice law. How little you know. You cool the client. The senior partner, having made an assessment of the client's worth, decides how much of his wealth the law firm will take from him in fees, regardless of how simple or complicated the case is. It would amaze you to know how a talented law firm can complicate the most simple case by creating setbacks, other delays, filing wrong or useless motions, petitions, initiating incorrect lines of argument, etc. The object, you see, is to keep the case going as long as possible, all the while milking the client for nearly every penny he or she may be worth. If, despite the law firm's best efforts, the case is ever brought to a conclusion, and if the law firm has done a masterful job of cooling the client consistently throughout his ordeal, the client ends up impoverished and very, very grateful. Pardon me, counselor, but isn't that called robbery? In the law, it's called building a solid reputation. Supposing, counselor, in the initial interview, the senior partner discovers this particular client isn't rich enough to be worth robbing. One of three things happens. First, the client could be persuaded that his case could be handled just as well and more cheaply by a smaller, less prestigious law firm. Which law firm, incidentally, is expected to kick back to the recommending law firm a percentage of whatever fees the poor client is able to pay? The rich get richer, and the poor get screwed. Or second, if the case has any value to the partners socially, or if it might generate beneficial publicity or whatever, even if the client doesn't have sufficient wherewithal to be worth robbing, the case is taken. It is then handled with such dazzling speed and efficiency, the world is breathless as it watches. The old boy network is used, private deals are struck, a settlement is arrived at swiftly and cheaply, not always to the client's complete benefit. And the law firm's reputation becomes even more solid. I'm giving you the internal workings of your average greedy law firm. At least of Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. How some lawyers look at the law, you might say. You're robbing me of my innocence. The third thing that might happen is that which happened this morning, which is what I'm trying to tell you about. If a person who engages himself as a lawyer is a fool, what's a person who engages Habeck, Harrison, and Holler? You can see why violence is not always an illogical solution. A solution discovered by an increasing percentage of our population, Fletch said. Have you heard the complaint? The courts don't work? Once or twice, Alston admitted. The third thing that can happen with an impecunious client is what I saw happen this morning. A burglar rushes from the court and finds himself being interviewed by Mr. Holler. The presumption can be made that if the burglar had enough money to afford Habeck, Harrison, and Holler, he wouldn't be a burglar. A lot of burglars do afford Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. There's a system to everything, you see. The legal system. Burglars, obviously, must be represented. They have their rights. They are in a hazardous profession, no telling when their presence might be requested in a court of law. That's the breaks and entering. So, Mr. Holler, this morning, after pretending to listen to the bare bones of our new burglar client's difficulty, explains to the burglar that many of his colleagues in the burglary business retain Habeck, Harrison, and Holler on an annual basis. A kind of occupational insurance, you see, just in case their earning a living is threatened by an arrest, conviction, and jail sentence. For example, Mr. Holler explains, if our burglar this morning had already paid such a retainer to Habeck, Harrison, and Holler, a Habeck, Harrison, and Holler lawyer such as myself would have been waiting for him at the police station when he was arrested Saturday night to do the proper and necessary. He wouldn't have even had to set bail for himself. How much of a retainer? $10,000. Not much, really, when you consider that a burglar in prison is no good to anyone. Not to his family, not to his friends, not to the economy, and not to Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. In jail, he can't make a living. Alston, if this guy had $10,000 Saturday, why would he go burglarizing Saturday night? That's not the idea. He wouldn't have $10,000. The law firm would have $10,000. So the man can go earn his living without fret. Peace of mind, Fletcher, is worth almost any price. I've heard. So our burglar client is told this morning by Mr. Holler that if he comes up with $10,000 within 10 days, that is, before his next court appearance, he may look forward to the full services, support, and talents of Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. If not, Mr. Holler can recommend to the burglar a smaller, cheaper, less prestigious law firm, which can be counted on to represent the burglar to the best of their limited resources. How the hell is a two-bit burglar supposed to come up with $10,000 within 10 days? Guess. You're kidding. I'm not kidding. You mean a senior partner in a major law firm is sending a burglar out to burgle? Really, we only want professionals among our clientele. Isn't Mr. Holler technically a member of the court? He's a half-decent golfer and a doting grandparent. Did the burglar accept this deal? Of course. Where would his family be if he went to jail? Lock your doors tonight. In other words, the burglar is now burglarizing on behalf of Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. If he's going to be in this profession, obviously his professional fees and expenses have to be guaranteed. Supposing he gets arrested again? All the more work and all the more fees for Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. Alston, you're making me sick. I'm sure it's not the sandwich you just ate affecting you. What could be more soothing to the stomach than peanut butter, banana, and mayonnaise? I must try it sometime. Frankly, I'm shocked. In the first place, that your man Holler, who must have just heard that his partner had been shot dead in a parking lot, would sit down and have a serious discussion with any client, burglar or not. It only took 15 minutes. After the client is hooked by the senior partner, he is spun off to one of the lesser lawyers in the firm. The rent must be paid. The Mercedes must be maintained. Alston, do you want a Mercedes? My ambition for one is dimming. Chapter 9. The waiter stood over them. Would you gentlemen like some coffee, tea, or would you prefer sludge? What kind of sludge do you have? Fletch asked. Chocolate, vanilla. No strawberry, Alston said. I wanted strawberry sludge. No strawberry, sighed the waiter. Guess I'll have coffee, said Fletch. I'll have another beer, said Alston. Put a cherry in it this time, will you? One coffee, said the waiter. One beer with a cherry. Alston, Fletch said, I'd like to know anything you can find out about Donald Habeck. Anything you can tell me. Only actually shook hands with him the day I was hired. A short, pudgy man. I know, Fletch said, adjusting his belt. Considered one of the most brilliant criminal trial lawyers in the country. That's the point. It can't be too surprising a man with such a wide acquaintance among criminals ends up shot in a parking lot. It is surprising, Alston countered. He's the one person you'd think would be safe from that sort of thing. I should think all the villains around here would consider themselves indebted to him. One coffee, said the waiter. One beer with a cherry in it. Fletch looked at Alston's beer. He actually put a cherry in it. I wanted a cherry in it. Are you going to eat it? You're eyeing my cherry. Sorry. I mean, just suppose this were a contract murder. A contract were put out to murder Habeck. Who'd accept it? Habeck's defended most of the murderers worthy of the name. Hey, a job's a job. From what I hear, professional hitmen do not like to murder anyone they know, even people toward whom they have nothing but good feelings. Always afraid a connection might be made. Someone who isn't grateful to Habeck. Someone Habeck failed, defended improperly, lost the case. For example, I'd look for an ex-client of Habeck who got out of prison lately, spent time nursing the grudge. I doubt there is anyone like that. There must be. Habeck can't be successful every time he goes to court. Successful in one way or another. Mr. Harrison, the other senior partner, once said to me, you can commit mass murder in front of witnesses, including police witnesses, and we can guarantee you'll never go to prison for it. The police or district attorney can always be counted on to make some technical mistake in the arresting process, indictment, in the gathering and presenting of evidence. He actually said that? He actually said that. That's terrible. Alston shrugged. The average policeman in this country has something like 6 weeks of formal training. The average defense lawyer has more like 6 years, if you add his internship in the law firm. And district attorneys are hopelessly overworked and understaffed. How do people ever succeed in getting to jail? They don't hire Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. Alston, Habeck could not have won 100% of the cases he brought to trial. Pretty near, I'll bet. He gets to choose his own cases, thanks to plea bargaining. I'll bet even those of his clients who are or have been in jail have been happy to go, on reduced charges, you know. Alston quaffed his beer. But I'll look. Was Habeck a rich man? Pretty rich. He knew where his next bong in Olufsen was coming from. Rich enough to give away $5 million? Is anybody that rich? That's how I first heard of him this morning. He was coming in to see the publisher, John Winters. Habeck wanted to announce that he and his wife were giving $5 million to the museum, but he wanted it announced discreetly, whatever that means, so their privacy wouldn't be invaded. He's never been the most flamboyant lawyer this coast, but he's never shunned publicity before. I suspect he's never given away $5 million before. That's an awful lot of money. Alston munched on his beer-soaked cherry. What does it mean when someone gives away $5 million?
It means he ought to get lunch, at the minimum.
No, seriously.
It means he's a philanthropist, kindly, generous, has the well-being of the world in his heart.
Is that how you describe Donald Habeck?
No. As I say, I only met the man once, but that's not how I'd describe him.
He was a partner in a law firm which keeps murderers out of jail and sends burglars out to burgle.
In this country, Fletch, everyone has the right to the best defense.
Come on, Alston. Not all law firms operate the way you describe Habeck, Harrison, and Holler.
Not all. Many do.
Is it possible for Habeck to have earned so much money simply by being a lawyer?
Oh, yes. Over a lifetime, that and more.
Much more?
I'm not sure.
Why was he giving away $5 million?
Didn't have anything else to do with it, I suppose. A man in his 60s.
Fletch wrinkled his nose in the sunlight. He had children, I think. Grown, of course. Grandchildren. The imposter I interviewed this morning, the weird lady who said she was Mrs. Habeck and wasn't, mentioned children and grandchildren. The gardener at the Habeck house said that the real Mrs. Habeck is young. I don't get it.
Expiate guilt. Maybe Habeck was trying to rid himself of his own guilt.
He sounds like a man who spent his life rationalizing away guilt, professionally, his own and others.
Yeah, but he was getting older.
With a young wife? I don't get it. His home just doesn't look like the home of someone who can give away $5 million. I mean, if you've got $100 million, giving away five can be a casual experience. It doesn't interrupt the flow of one's life, the rhythm of one's coming and going. But giving away $5 million, when maybe you have $6 million, a young wife, probably grandchildren?
Which of you gentlemen would like the bill? The waiter asked.
He would, Alston said solemnly.
No, Fletch said, give it to him.
You invited me to lunch, Alston said.
You asked me to.
Shall I pay it? Asked the waiter.
I had the pleasure of serving you.
He's got a point, Fletch said.
It would be the ultimate service, agreed Alston. I mean, it would indicate this waiter did everything possible for us.
It is the one possibility you haven't considered, concurred the waiter.
But what about the tip, Fletch asked. That presents a moral dilemma, also practical confusion.
The waiter looked around the outdoor cafe.
Oh, to work in a grown-up restaurant, he sighed, one with walls.
I'll pay the bill, Alston said to Fletch, if you answer me a question.
Anything.
Fletch watched Alston pay the bill.
Gee, Alston said after the waiter went away.
Over lunch, we talked about philanthropy, murder, and the law, and we didn't get any respect even from the waiter.
No one respects the young, mourned Fletch. Not managing editors, crime writers, society editors, liquor store, counter help.
Fiancés.
Fiancés.
Waiters.
Now that you've paid the bill, Fletch said, I've got a question for you.